My name is Aubrey Goodman, and this is Distilled. You can find us on the web at Distilled Radio, also on Twitter at Distilled Radio. You can find me on Twitter at Aubrey Goodman. Today I'm solo for an episode about reactive extensions. I've been working with reactive extensions for the better part of a year now, and built a product with that, and I'd like to tell y'all about it today. So before I get into that, I want to give a little backstory on why I got into it, and some of the things that it solves well, the circumstances that bring us to needing the kind of capabilities that reactive extensions offer. So for backstory, about 2 years ago, I built a web service called City Hiker. City Hiker is basically a simple mapping of road steepness, essentially. So you can imagine the idea originally was to find hills in the city and go hike up them. But as I started to talk to people about that idea, it became clear that other people don't necessarily want to hike. They might want to avoid the hills. So it was interesting that we could consider the same data as used for two different areas, but essentially looking at the same data from two different points of view, very different points of view. But the long and the short of it is I built this web service that allowed simple lookup. So if you want to look up, area, map area, certain part of the world, as an example, I live in San Francisco. And so I wanted to look around in my neighborhood and various other neighborhoods of the city where I might be able to go and, get a nice hike in and maybe see some beautiful views at the top of the hill. So I started looking for resources where you could find this kind of information. And as it turns out, topographical or topological maps, while they are beautiful and provide an extra level of detail, they don't really tell you anything about the roads themselves. So like you can see a contour of the hill if you look at the terrain feature on Google Maps, for example. But it doesn't give you very clear, certainly not searchable, parameters that you can find places. You can kind of look around, and it requires quite a lot of explicit thinking and searching, hunting basically. That can be part of the fun too, of course, but some of that, is more interesting in terms of being able to say, I want to look at a map at a high level and say, oh, here's clearly where I should go, because clearly here there are lots of steep hills. So in order to do that, we have to color code the map. And in order to do that, we have to have data. So I pulled data from OpenStreetMap and also Google Elevation API to generate essentially a web database of segments, road segments. So this means basically it's a latitude, longitude, altitude coordinate at each end of a line segment in 3D space. So with that information, we can position the segment as well as give it a color, because we can use the difference in height between the two endpoints to find the percent grade. And as it turns out, percent grade is very simple to map to color. So we can color a line segment based on its percent grade in an absolute sense to get a sense of how steep it is. So this is simple and straightforward once you have the data, but getting the data was the first hurdle. So as I said, I made a web service for that purpose about 2 years ago. And over the last year, I've been trying to find a good way to allow users to navigate this information and browse, but without essentially loading all the data for the world, but also essentially providing, you know, something performant. So I want people to be able to move around the map quickly and see different areas, but also be able to color or to change the color on the fly. In order to do that, I found myself working initially with lots of asynchronous design patterns where, you know, first I make a web service request and I might actually have to make several and then accumulate the results into a buffer. And then once they're all, once all the web transactions are completed, then I can take that resulting buffer and pass it through a filter to find points within the bounding box I'm looking for. And then take those points and use that to render a map. But as it sounds like, this does not sound like something that will happen in, you know, 50 to 100 milliseconds. So maybe not even 1 second, really, especially when we have web service requests. This kind of thing becomes quickly, I think, untenable. So the solutions I ended up with were focused on a database cache, so a local cache within a mobile app where I can make optimized queries against the web. Again, multiple queries potentially per user request. User might look at a large section of the map, and in order to render all those data points, we need to fetch them and organize them. And then once we have them, we need to color them and then render them on the map in a sensible way. But if we have asynchronous behaviors, such as our web requests, sometimes they need to be retried. Sometimes, you know, there are circumstances where that can't work in a synchronous environment. So you have to use some kind of pooling mechanism to make these requests, collect the results when they complete, and provide that to some next step in a pipeline. And the next step in the pipeline might be to filter that data. Like I said, the user is looking at a particular map region, but we might need to fetch the data through some other mechanism that doesn't use, you know, bounding box dynamics. So they may have fetched points that are outside of the span we want to show. Then secondarily, we want to only do that in the case where data doesn't exist in a local cache. And since you probably by now hear a substantial amount of waterfall mechanism happening here, where long dependency chains exist, and we have a need to take data and massage it, filter it, separate it, order it, modify it, and then, you know, provide it downstream, etc. This all sounds perfect for the kind of things that you do, the kinds of operational things you can do with an observable sequence. So at first I started building all this without reactive being, there's different ways people talk about this. There's like React.js, there's RxJS, there's reactive, I don't know. This specifically is Rx reactive extensions. And one of the strongest patterns here is something like a map reduce pattern, which we see in array processing and map processing in other languages, in languages like Ruby, for example, where we have array methods that return other arrays that are maybe subsets of the original array based on some filter lambda. So being able to inject behavior in and say, I want only things that match this criteria. That's really powerful with a reactive extension sequence. An observable sequence allows us to, react immediately. There are time dynamics we can take into consideration. So one of the things that that I found as I started to incorporate reactive into City Hiker was the timing, essentially. You know, a user navigates or makes a change to a UI component like a map, for example. They might do a pinch zoom or something like that, and as they do that, the map is redrawing, repainting. But we also have to now recompute the whole beginning of that pipeline again. So the range, or the radius range, whatever bounding box that we're looking at, has changed. And as a result, we may need to go fetch new data. So if the user is making lots of changes quickly, you know, with on the order of 50 to 100 milliseconds, you know, drag operations, for example, or pinch zoom, as they're doing that, they are introducing lots and lots of new parameters, new versions of what is essentially an observable sequence. So if we consider the driving force to be the map bounds, as an example, so we think of the center and the span of a map. In this case, that gives us a bounding box. And what it turned out in my case was I needed to take that bounding box and from a rectangle compute an array of rectangles, array of squares, really, where the squares represent grid subcells within the rectangle space. And the reason for this is geo hashing. I can essentially say, give me all the points within this grid cell. And that can be easily indexed and is very good for performance on the web. And I think there's a blog post on cityhikerapp.com to this point, talking about how this works and optimizing the map lookups. But so if you think about, right, like we resolve a rectangle into a set of smaller rectangles or a set of smaller cells. Now we have all an array of cells. So for each of those cells, I have to go and make a web request or possibly look up the data from the local database. So imagine the data flow looks a little bit like check to see if local data exists. If local data exists, return it. If not, then go fetch something from the web, save it in the local cache, and then return that. There's a third part that I'll cover shortly, briefly, I mean, which is, if no data exists in the remote system, I need some mechanism to allow the user to trigger fetching, essentially a lazy population of that data. But when we have this kind of waterfall going on, we're taking this rectangle, resolving it to these cells. From each one of these cells, we're rendering essentially a smaller, or like an array of segments, and the array of segments is going to be much larger in terms of number of elements than the number of grid cells. We start with one rectangle, expands out to, let's say, 10 cell sizes or cells. From those cells, each one produces 700-800 segment results. So as a result, now we have a lot of arrays that need to be flattened. So what we can do is take the original bounding box and define a mapping to map from that to the grid cells. And then that becomes a new observable of an array of grids or cells or whatever you call them. And then from that, we can observe each one of those. We make a web request. When it completes, we return it and flatten the entire set. So from a set of arrays, we make another set of arrays, and then the final set is to collapse all that into one giant array of segments. But clearly, we won't be able to keep up with the user's high-frequency requests, right? We said the user's probably moving the map at every 50 to 100, maybe 250 milliseconds at the slowest, but there definitely are multiple triggers per second. But each one of these web requests might take a second or two to complete due to the data size. And that has to do with the size of the cells you select. and the data set itself. But this gives us basically an overload into a system we would like to streamline. So what we can do is essentially use a take until trigger on the very first or upstream thing, stream source, I guess. And from there, we can essentially sample until we get a new one and then just basically ignore or cancel all the fetches we had. There's some benefit to not canceling the remote requests because we're looking at a place where the user looked recently, so they may go back. And if they do, then it's probably better to just let those things quietly continue in the background. But using reactive patterns, we can actually achieve all of this. And it really just matters. It comes down to where you sample from a feed that is dependent or is generated from another feed that is generated from another feed. So it's sort of a waterfall of events that flow down to complex components that are actually computing things and doing work, you know, fetching information, filtering it, maybe applying some transform. But in order, like, this pipeline allows us to achieve that in a really meaningful and quite powerful way. Now, the pitfalls, I have to say, some basic simple things like naming. As an architect, I am responsible for maintaining sane names within my organization. Naming is important to me. And it comes down to, in my eyes, a developer experience. So if you think of a developer experience as like everybody who is an engineer who's encountering an API for the first time, they want to try and learn it. They want to try and understand, you know, what its features are, what its limitations are. And the names really help to grease the wheels, making that conversation plausible. And basically, if a component is named something like throttle, in this case, I'm using the example throttle because it really is truly misnamed, I believe. What the throttle the operator will do is, if you have a sequence of events that is emitted every 15 milliseconds, and you have a downstream thing that can't handle things more than once every second. So you can say, I want to sample that first, I want to subscribe to that first stream, but I want to limit the total number of invocations per second to be 1 per second. You would think the word throttle seems to inherently convey that, but in this case, it only works if the source is a known repeating stream, or excuse me, a known non-repeating string. Because basically what throttle does is it waits until it, like the time has passed. So if you say, I want to throttle for 250 milliseconds, it will wait until such time as no event has been emitted from the source within the last 250 milliseconds. So it'll wait for periods like a lull before it will fire, and only fires after the lull has been satisfied, the lull condition, which is the exact opposite of what I think of when I think of throttle. To me, throttle means send me at most blank number of instances per time period. So it turns out that the right operator to use here is actually sample. Sample allows you to provide a timer and then use that timer as the frequency trigger for the other stream, basically doing what I had expected the sample or the throttle mechanism to do. Is sample is the one that actually does that. So by sampling upstream at, let's say, 250 milliseconds, I guarantee that I never have to try to fetch data more than once every quarter of a second. And then basically that means that any of my downstream things are capped at once or four times per second. And I can also use other mechanisms to drive different things, essentially by using a combined latest operator or a zip operator to allow multiple streams to be recombined. You can sample off of a stream and then recombine back into it using a combined latest. There's a lot of really complex things that you can do with reactive extensions that I think you should do. The big one is asynchronous, though. I can't stress enough that it required me to just basically completely take my head out of my brain out of my head and turn it upside down and put it back in and think, okay, everything I do is based on asynchronous callbacks and managing promises and things like that. But when everything in the system is based on synchronous processing and immediate blocking, triggering, all executing on a specific thread or even some dedicated thread prescribed or injected in to the configuration. So it made me have to really completely unlearn how I think about sequential parallel operations. But it has its complexities, and the complexities are not small. The learning curve is substantial, but I do encourage people to try it. I think there's so many ways that you can go wrong with asynchronous parallel mechanisms and queuing, and especially when you're using complex solutions for things like data storage, whether using Realm or Core Data or any of the other existing mechanisms, frameworks for data storage. They all suffer from the same concurrency issues, which is you can't access Realm objects across different queues. If you're trying to access a background queue to do some processing on an object, you can't cross that object into access that same object on a main queue, for example. So you have to be very diligent still, and those things won't go away because of your reusing reactive extensions, but it can actually really hurt you. I bring it up because of that. One of the things I experienced while I was integrating Realm into CityHiker was this. I tried to observe something on a different queue than I had subscribed on it, and every time I did this, it was crashing. And it turned out that I was trying to access, that I was passing a Realm object as the observable object down the pipeline, and then that naturally broke as soon as I tried to dispatch that to a secondary thread. So there are definitely pitfalls, I would say. But again, it's really worth your time investing. And there are resources out there. I'm publishing this because I think there's not enough resources, really. And the resources that are there will teach you how to implement certain things. But I have a hard time finding resources that tell anybody why they should use this thing over this other thing and how to combine things in a meaningful way beyond just the simple examples that you'll find otherwise. We're getting to the end of the show here. And I just want to again promote CityHiker. It's currently in beta. It's an iOS app currently. I'd like to get an Android app out as well, maybe sometime in the next 6 months, but although probably not, work schedules and all that. So this is the part about side hustle that's not without its negatives. We when we're building something meaningful as a side project, it's sometimes really easy to lose focus, to lose time on that thing because you're caught up in, work from your main hustle, as it were. But never let it slow you down. it's worth it. I have to say, on a personal note, podcasting has been that for me. It's something that I've been really hard found it hard to find time for, especially with all the major publication, all the efforts that have gone into to getting Motive Ring out to customers, which has been a very very educational experience, I must say. And I'd love to publish sometime one day on that point. But side hustle is sometimes you want it to be your main hustle. And maybe if you do well enough, you might actually get there. And reactive extensions can help you do that. At least I found that they help me to move faster and be more prescriptive in the design. In there, I find them, once you learn how to read the configuration of what a observable looks like, I find them to be very, very succinct. So yeah, I think I'm going to wrap on that. I like succinct things, and rather than go on about how much I like succinct brevity, I'll just be brief and say, this has been Distilled. Thanks for listening.